Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things movie and nostalgia podcasts, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, the podcast where we invite a guest to revisit pop culture from their childhood. I'm Jordan Poland Clark, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Kara Gail O'Regan.
Hello.
And with us today is nobody. We did not invite a guest to the show today because there is a children's television show that Kara and I have been wanting to talk about for a long time. And honestly, we just got tired of waiting for somebody to choose it because both of us have watched the entire series and we just want to talk about it.
Also, because there's just so much to talk about.
There's so much to talk about. Guys, we're going to talk about Pete and Pete today. Pete and Pete is a show about two brothers, both named Pete, who live with their mom and dad in the fictitious suburb of Wellsville. And here is when I want to say what kind of adventures that they go on in the show, but it's actually a show that's pretty hard to describe, and if I tried to describe it to you, it wouldn't really sound better or different than other shows that are like it. But we think that this show is kind of different and special. Pete and Pete was a live-action show on Nickelodeon. It was the first ever live-action show on Nickelodeon. It preceded shows that most people remember, like Hey Dude and Welcome Freshman, and shows like that. It started as a series of, like, one-minute shorts in 1989 that apparently just, like, were kind of good, and the network kind of took a chance and asked the guys who made the shorts to make some specials that they ran between 1991 and 1993. And I guess those were good, too, because then it had three real seasons from 1993 to 1996. And, man, is this show good? Kara, what do you have to say starting out about this show?
Well, starting out, the actual title of the show was The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know. I'm just
right. You're right.
I'm a stickler for details, you know.
I know.
That's actually not true. I don't remember what I was going to say next, but I am so super excited to talk about this show because it's something that I've rewatched on multiple occasions, and throughout my life it's like still just as good as it was like the first time around.
Yeah, I agree. This show is legitimately funny. We picked three episodes to watch for today. I laughed out loud like dozens of times while I was watching them, and I'm not sure, like, I can't tell if that's because I have such fond memories of it, like, as a kid, or obviously I actually think the writing is good. There's a ton of cameos that we'll talk about that are super fun. I did show this to somebody who's about 6 years younger than me who had never seen it before, and he was like, I don't get it. But whatever.
But it's also, like, super weird, and that's the thing that I love about it the most, and, like, it just is exactly my kind of humor and, like, weirdness.
Yeah, I agree. It's, like, really surreal. The characters are, like, really specific. Like, it really feels like it, I feel like it has a lot of lore. Like, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, like, there's that one kid and this is what everyone says about him, and it's like something super weird. And like, that's what every character on this show is like. So there are parts about it, like, while it's really surreal and weird, I think there are parts about it, and we'll get into this more as we talk about the episodes that we watched, but there are parts about it that feel like just so real to being a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's really that, like, spirit of childhood and adolescence that the show crystallizes so perfectly that, like, even if what's going on in the episode is really bizarre and not realistic, or, you know, however you want to describe it, the kernels of childhood are there, and just so uniquely and specifically emotionally, like, real. That wasn't articulate.
I think that was really articulate to call them kernels of childhood. I think that's, I really agree with you.
Thanks.
I feel like the way that we're coming at this is just, like, with love, and we watched a bunch of episodes and didn't do, like, a ton of research. And honestly, like, it's all been done. Like, if you want to read about this show, just go read it on the AV Club. They, like, have done a ton of writing about this, you know, after the fact in the last few years, and it's really, really great. So I recommend it. If you like this show, go read about it on the AV Club. They did a better job with the history and all that than we're going to do here today. So that said, we had a really hard time choosing what episodes to even watch, because they were just like, we would start to narrow it down and then we would be like, oh yeah, but that one. Oh yeah, but that one. Like, it was just too exciting. We had a hard time. Yeah. So instead of narrowing it down to three episodes like we do on this show, we narrowed it down to three episodes for today, and we are probably going to do this again. We chose three episodes that are all Little Pete episodes. So we're going to be looking at the world through the eyes of Little Pete. Kara, how would you describe Little Pete?
Oh, man. Oh, man. I mean, Little Pete is the id. Like, he is just, like, the human embodiment of the id, which is, like, the inner child. So he's the outer child. But at the same time has this, like, really rebellious and anti-authoritarian streak in him that also makes him, like, a little adult. And there's, like, other weird characteristics about him that make him a little adult. Like, he has a tattoo on his arm of a dancing lady named Petunia. He always wears, like, a weird red plaid hat, which I guess isn't necessarily an adult sort of thing, but it reads kind of as, like, one of the aspects of his tiny adult character, I guess. Little Pete, played by Danny Tamborelli, who... And I also am curious about people who didn't grow up in New Jersey and how they feel about the show, because there's so much... It was shot in New Jersey with people who live in New Jersey and, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm just curious how much of what I love about this show is just what I love about New Jersey. But Danny Tamborelli is kind of a Northern New Jersey legend. Like, everyone that I know has a weird Danny Tamborelli story where, like, they ran into him somewhere, or when he was working at Goldberg's Bagels and Wyckoff, he made them a sandwich once, or, like, I helped his mom at the Genius Bar on multiple occasions and swapped out his iPhone once. So it's just, like, there's this weird... Everyone is, like, one degree away from Danny Tamborelli in Northern New Jersey, and I just find that hilarious.
I also find a lot of joy in watching this because I'm from New Jersey, because they shot a lot of it in South Orange, and I'm from West Orange, so it all just looks so familiar, mm-hmm. And one of my favorite things to do is to, in the end credits, they often will list, like, what streets they shot it on.
Oh, really?
And what towns they shot it in.
I guess I'm going to have to rewatch all of this all over again, for that part. You do.
Because it's really fun to be like, oh, they were on this street, and then, like, to go look it up. Like, I've never recognized any of it, like, straight up without looking. Mm-hmm. But, I'll look it up and be like, oh, cool, I get it, that's where they were.
Yeah.
I agree, the New Jersey thing probably helps us like this even more. I really like how you describe Little Pete as a little adult. I think he's also in some ways treated that way by his parents and by other people. Not that he's necessarily treated like a little adult, but he's treated as with a tremendous amount of respect by the everybody around him, whether it's because they're scared of him or because they're related to him or because they're his friend and they just, like, truly respect him.
Or some combination of all of the above.
Right, which is what it probably really is. But he's always treated with a lot of respect, and so I think that allows his character to really, really shine through in a way that is just so strong for a kid. Mm-hmm. And he is so smart. Like, he's so smart, and he's so strong-willed. Like, he's one of those kids that, like, you're like, I don't want him in my class. I never want to deal with him. But you have this respect for him because he just is who he is, and you can't fight with him about it.
Yeah.
And he has this, like, tremendous need for freedom, which really is what defines all of the episodes that we watched today, where, like, he just wants to do what he wants to do. He doesn't want adults to tell him what to do. He really needs to find everything, like, in his own way, and everyone around him just has to deal with that. And one of the things I wrote in my notes while I was rewatching the episodes today was that, like, I think that that's going to make him, like, the coolest adult. Mm. I was just thinking about, like, what he might be like.
He might be a nightmare.
Really? You think? Like, in what way?
Well, I mean, in general, he's kind of a nightmare, but I don't know how much of that is, like, him. Well, because for as little freedom as you have as a child, and he's really bucking against that constantly, like, in a lot of ways, as an adult, you have even less freedom. Like, sure, you can sit on your couch without pants on and smoke weed and, like, eat chocolate ice cream for dinner if that's what you want to do because you're an adult. I wouldn't know anything about that. But, you know, once you're an adult, you're constrained by things like your job and, you know, if you have kids or a spouse or, like, whatever, a mortgage, like, all of these things that kind of box us in. I suspect that as an adult, little Pete would be, like, maybe living in a van down by the river just so that he doesn't have to deal with that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I don't know.
I guess the reason why I don't see it that way is because I think his life always seems really grounded in the end. Mm. Like, you know, he has these great parents. He's really close with his brother. Like, he goes on these, like, crazy, like, rebellious adventures. And then, like, sometimes, like, learns some kind of lesson at the end. Like, I see him as, like, growing and changing, even just in, like, the three episodes that we watched. So to me, that says there's more to him than just, like, some nightmare of a human.
It's possible.
All right, let's get into the episode. So yes, we're going to talk about these in chronological order. I don't know if it matters or not. The show, I don't know, Kara, do you think it matters if you watch this show in chronological order?
I think it does, and I just watched all of it within, like, a few weeks span, so I did watch it all in chronological order. Like you just said, like, in these specific episodes that we're going to be talking about, Pete has these experiences and learns from them and kind of grows from them, and so that effect is kind of cumulative, and I think we were talking about maybe the third season just isn't as good, isn't as iconic, or, like, whatever, but I think it's just because, like, both he and his older brother are more, like, mature, which, like, kind of makes it less fun. But also, I think that there's, like, these are characters that are, like, really fully fleshed out, and even characters that might be kind of one-dimensional, like, for instance, somebody like Pit Stain, who is defined by his glandular disorder, and that's what everyone knows him for and knows him as. He's actually, like, a really robust character, and you see that kind of change over the arc of the second and third season. So if you watched an episode with Pit Stain from, like, maybe the latter half of the third season before you watched an episode with Pit Stain from early in the second season, you would notice a huge difference, and it wouldn't quite make any sense. So I think just like the characters themselves have this development that happens over the course of the series, and also the relationships between the characters develop and build, or whatever the opposite of that is, over time. So I think, you know, and also, I mean, this is a just, you know, in real life, these characters, these actors, you know, this is an extremely formative time for people, and older Pete definitely went through puberty on the show, you know, like, so I think that, you know, just the actors themselves are significantly different from between the first and the third season. And so, yeah, I think it does matter.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think I've watched the whole third season since I was small. There was like a few that I skipped when I was watching this, but I did watch the last episode, and there is this kind of like almost like sadness in the last episode. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll do that episode one day. But for today, our first episode is an episode called Nightcrawlers.
Which, great segue, in that episode that you were just talking about, the final episode is called Saturday, and a character called Wayne the Pain acquires a pair of Krebstar sneakers called Nightwalkers. Which I really appreciated, because it was like such a great callback to this episode from the first season.
Yeah. So in Nightcrawlers, little Pete is super upset that he has a bedtime. And, you know, so that's what he's rebelling against in this episode. And he decides that he's not just going to stay up past his bedtime, but he's going to stay up long enough to break the world record, how long a person has stayed up.
Yeah, it started kind of as a bet between him and his mother, where he was like, that's it, I'm not going to bed. And she was like, fine, just stay up forever, why don't you? Or, like, whatever she says. And
Right. They did that great thing where they, like, zoomed in on her brain, and it had all, like, the mom sections. Like, it was, like, call his bluff, bribe him, get dad. It was, like, all of the mom choices that she could make when, like, he starts, you know, rebelling against her.
Uh-huh.
And she goes with, what does she go with? Would you remember what they called it?
I think it might be the call his bluff.
I think it might be,
because
also
she's like challenging him, like, oh yeah, right, you think you're so tough, why don't you go ahead and stay up all night? And he was like, all right. Which is just such a little Pete moment of like, calling the bluff of a character like him is like definitely a losing proposition every single time. I think.
Which his parents learn like over and over again. So he says, yeah, all right. And so then she chooses to double call his bluff, which was not a good choice. So he says he's going to stay up for, I think it's 11 days. Is it 11 days?
Yeah, something like that.
It's like, yeah. So he says he's going to stay up for 11 days. He gathers up his friends, like this ragtag group from the neighborhood. I love all of them. And Artie, we'll talk about, I feel like we need to wait a second to talk about Artie, because there's a lot to say there.
There's a lot there.
He gathers them up. They call themselves Nightcrawlers. They're going to stay up for 11 days. And they all have like a little trick for like how they keep themselves awake. Like, Kara, what does the Fig Newton girl call it?
Fig Newly power.
So yeah, the one girl like eats Fig Newtons, because they have twice the amount of sugar of regular cookies, so she eats them to stay awake. One girl, Heather Matarazzo from Welcome to the Dollhouse. Kara, did you watch that movie when you were younger?
Yes. Yeah. She was also in So You Think You're a Cheerleader. No, that's not the name of it.
Oh. But I'm a cheerleader.
Yeah. So You Think You Can Cheerlead?
I'd watch that. So Heather Matarazzo's thing is like she has her hair in braids and they just pull her eyes open. There's a girl whose name I can't remember, but her thing is that she looks at the sun and it makes her sneeze, and that's how she stays awake. Who am I missing?
Oh, there's a bunch of them. I don't remember what the other ones have, though.
I think those are the best like stay awake superpowers.
Yeah.
Artie's is that he, like, plays his Krebstar radio and dances around to funny music. So they try to stay awake for 11 days. Lots of them drop off along the way. Little Pete almost, he's the last one left. He almost doesn't make it to the end. But in the end, his mom helps him out. His mom helps him get to the 11 days. They have a compromise where she's like, oh, but you're my little boy. I just don't want you to grow up. And he says, I have to look. I wrote it down because it was a really sweet line. Like, it's a really sweet exchange between them at the end.
Yeah, it is.
I cried. I thought it was so nice. She said, oh, like, I want you to stay young forever or something like that. And he looks at her and he goes, it's not like I can help it. And it's just, it was so sweet. And so then they have a compromise. She makes his bedtime later and helps him stay up and break the world record. Happy ending. I chose this episode for us to watch. I think it's a really iconic one, but it was the one that I remembered the most. Because I just have this, like, memory of the girl, so the sneezing girl, when she starts to get really sleepy, they all start to lose their minds, you know, because sleep deprivation, and they're like seeing things and they're doing weird stuff. So she wanders off into a neighbor's yard and gets lost and like can't get out of the neighbor's yard, and she's just like looking at the sky waiting for the sun to come out, and the sun hasn't come out, and then she just like plops down on the ground. But the most like vivid memory I have of the show is of her looking up at the sky trying to find the sun and not being able to sneeze.
Yeah, I agree, it's very, very iconic. I really connected with this episode as a kid because I hated going to bed, and like to the extent that my parents just were like, fine, like just stay in your room. Like you can stay up as late as you want, just stay in your room and like don't wake us up. And I was like, okay. So I like spent many nights just like doing weird things in my closet or whatever. and then also, like, as an adult, having worked a job that required a lot of overnight shifts, like, I was just thinking so much about that and, like, that delirium that sets in at, like, 3:30, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And to the thought of, like, doing it several days in a row without even being able to, like, take a nap in the middle is so horrifying. Especially for those, like, tiny developing brains. Sleep is important.
Oh yeah, their brains must be broken. So I want to get into like a little bit of like the structure of the show that we see in like I would say every episode. Big Pete narrates.
Mm-hmm.
Does he narrate every episode? He does.
Not every episode. I believe there's 2 or 3 episodes that he actually does not narrate, which I think are all in the final season, but I might be wrong about that.
All right, so he does narrate this one. He narrated all the ones we watched, actually, and so, like, it's this, like, extra lens, I feel like, that you see little Pete through, which is the lens of his big brother,
mm-hmm.
Who is very much not like him.
Right.
He's, like, pretty laid back, like, pretty smart, pretty, like, even. He doesn't really have these, like, emotional outbursts that Pete has. And then, because he's the older brother, he kind of, like, speaks with this wisdom. Like, he's almost not a kid anymore, but he's mm-hmm. still a kid. But, like, because he's older, he, like, understands all these things and these rules about life that, like, little Pete doesn't understand yet.
And I think that he sees things as, like, way more complicated than little Pete does. And he's very sensitive and is kind of like grappling with a lot that like I feel like he's kind of crested over that period of time in your adolescence where you start to realize that like everything is a lie. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
That like everything is not what you thought it was, and like adults have been lying to you forever, and you know, but he has so much reverence for little Pete, for his little brother, which I think kind of turns the traditional, like, big brother, little brother dynamic on its head, that he has so much respect for him.
Yeah, he really does, and so much patience for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he, like, over and over again, like, helps little Pete. Like, he does blow him off a couple times in other episodes, but like, for the most part, he's, like, really there for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the episodes we watch are all narrated by Big Pete and about Little Pete. And the way that Big Pete narrates is with such drama, such drama. Like, everything is about life and death. Except the way he's saying it, it's flat. Like, I don't know. Carrie, I feel like you'd have better words for this than I do.
Well, like I was saying, that he is kind of, like, grappling with the weight of the world and whatever, but...
in a very emotionless way.
I wouldn't say it's emotionless. I think he's a teenage boy. And so, you know, like, it's... His emotions are not necessarily, like, right there. He can't necessarily reach out and touch them. But, like, right. he is feeling it. It just, his delivery of it is more like he's doing a dramatic reading than telling a story. Yeah.
Like, I agree with you. I do think he has emotional depth. But it is more like he's doing a dramatic reading of the events rather than, like, living them himself.
Mm-hmm. But also, I said to you at some point when I started rewatching the show that I thought that maybe this entire series is just, like, an exploration of masculinity. Because all of the male characters... Or, like, the primary male characters in the series, Big Pete, Little Pete, and also their dad. And it was the episode where their dad's dad is there with them as well that made me think about this. That, like Little Pete is this kind of pure id, and Big Pete is more sensitive and questioning, but, like, trying to grapple with what's expected of him as a young man, and then his father doing all of this, like, performative masculinity, and then his father kind of holding him to this, like, impossible standard of masculinity. I think that there's a lot there that, like, I can't necessarily, like, articulate, but it's definitely kind of like an exploration of the weird societal expectations that we have for little boys and teenage boys and even grown-ass men.
Yeah, no, I think you just did articulate it really well.
Thanks.
Yeah. And, yeah, it is a show that is mostly about dudes. I mean, they have a lot of really good peripheral, like, female characters, mm-hmm. but it's not about them.
Right.
It's about all these dudes. There's, like, this is so hard because, like, there's so much that I want to say, and it's all just, like, stray thoughts. Like, I don't know, can we talk a little bit about, like, the writing in this?
Sure.
Like, there were so... Maybe we should wait till the end, though. Like, there were so many phrases that I wrote down that I was just like, oh, yeah. Like, it's really quotable.
Little Pete's, like, his insults are the best.
Really good.
Like, and I didn't write any of them down, which I definitely should have. But, like, I think one of them was, like, eat dirt, gut bucket, and... You know, and they're all kind of, like, in that same vein, and they're so descriptive and good without ever... I mean, maybe I missed it, but they're never, like, homophobic. They're never, you know, they're never really, like, about...
They're never, like, making fun of... Except for Pitstain.
Right. Yeah, well, Pitstain, but... and Hairnet and Nightbrace. That whole crew, really.
Yeah. And Papercut, like, too, those a little
bit. Oh, yeah. Papercut. Oh, that's such a good character. Yeah, even, like, these villainous characters are just, like, so good and pure.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm going to read, just because I don't know where else to fit this stuff in, I'm going to read all the phrases that I really love from this episode that I wrote down.
Sure.
They called, they very, even Big Pete, I feel like, very much sees adults as, like, kind of the enemy, although certainly as much as Little Pete does, but, you know, they're like, well, adults rule the world. So they call it the international adult conspiracy that keeps adults in control. He calls it, he's like explaining the whole bedtime thing Big Pete is, and he says, adults' grisly grip on power of the world. There's a great phone call between the Pete's dad and another parent where he's talking about how he switched out the whole milk for 2% milk. Like, he's plotting against his kids to feed them 2% milk. Let's see, what else? He describes it as the bitter taste of being powerless. So dramatic. They describe... Libby. Libby is the girl who sneezes. They describe her sneezing as blow the snooze right out of her. Let's see, did I write down any fun things from this episode? He says, the stakes had never been higher for Cranston Street or for the world. It's just so dramatic. And every time one of them falls asleep, it's like they're dying in a horror movie. I thought this actually used, like, a few horror movie tropes that I was like, ooh, in a different light, this, like, actually could be scary.
Yeah.
That's all I got for Nightcrawler. Carrie, you got anything else for Nightcrawlers?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So the next episode we watch is called Grounded for Life. This is the first episode of season 2, so we've skipped ahead a season.
And like you were saying during Nightcrawlers, that the scene where Libby is standing there staring at the sun and waiting to sneeze is like burned into your memory. There's a shot in this episode where Little Pete takes a statue, a small statue of this.
It's a paperweight.
A paperweight of the Statue of Liberty, and like shoves it up from underground, and it like breaks through the grass. And it, like, there's a swell of music, and it's, like, this, like, freedom moment that is probably the most iconic moment to me in the show. And, like, might be the source of my weird obsession with the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, there's, I feel like in all of these episodes, there's this weird, like, history lesson in all of them. In some way. This one is a 4th of July related episode. So there's a lot of like talking about Statue of Liberty, whatever. So the premise of this episode is that Little Pete wants to see what happens if you turn on a humidifier and a dehumidifier at the same time. He does it outside in their front lawn on his father's prized possession, which is his grass.
Which is another example of their father's performative masculinity. Like, this is the way that he can kind of wave his dick around, for like, lack of a better term.
And at the end of this episode, Little Pete totally recognizes that. He says, like, you know, Dad, like, some dads are good at sports and some are good at business and you just have your grass. But so Little Pete makes an explosion on the grass. He is not sorry for it. There's like a great like short montage of his dad making him do a bunch of stuff to punish him. Like he has to spin around and be a human sprinkler. I forget what else he has to do.
There's at one point he has to like lay down on the grass, like, and I don't.
He has to plant it back one seed at a time.
Right. Yeah. So he's just like laying down on his stomach, and his dad's like, "You sorry yet?" He's like,
"No,
no way."
So he's never sorry, and so he gets grounded. He gets grounded for 1 month, I believe.
Which in kid time is basically
that's
forever.
A long time, 1 month.
It's a very long time.
So it's nearing the 4th of July, and appropriately, little Pete decides that he is going to dig for his freedom with the Statue of Liberty paperweight. So
he's going to tunnel his way
out. He does 4 feet a day and does the math to decide that he will break out on the 4th of July.
When his family is away at the fireworks. Right. And Big Pete is, like, in cahoots with him and is, like, helping him do this by trying to get rid of all the dirt that little Pete is displacing while digging this tunnel. So he's, like, trying to hide it in all of these weird places, one of which is, like, the coffee grounds. So his dad, like, makes coffee and then takes a sip and spits it out. That's another really, like, iconic moment for me. It's, like, Big Pete trying to find a place for all of this
dirt.
That
was one of my favorite parts of the episode. And, like, I feel like it was really glazed over. Like, there was just, like, one scene where Big Pete was, like, trying to get rid of all the dirt in lots of different ways. And the one that made me laugh out loud was that he started doing pottery with it.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought they really just glazed over that, and it could have been more. It was a good joke.
Also, you can't do pottery with just dirt and water. Yeah. Like, it's more complicated.
Old stickler for facts, Kara. So this episode is the first appearance of Nona F. Mecklenburg.
And her dog Nimbus, which Nimbus is Latin for rain bearing, which is significant, bearing in mind Nimbus has this bladder problem,
right, he doesn't pee.
Where he can't pee. Well, it's because they just moved to town and he misses their old house so much that he, like, refuses to go to the bathroom.
And Nona misses their house a lot too, and so she's just, like, walking around town, like, talking to adults, basically, is how I would describe it. She's, like, bothering adults on their front lawn. And, like, I think she's so fun because it's so clear right away that, like, she's going to be such a good match, like, to be Little Pete's friend, because she's just, like, a little pisser. Like, she just talks and talks and talks and says a bunch of shit.
Yeah, and she's, like, also kind of a tiny adult, I feel like.
So while she's walking around town, she ends up, how does she find Little Pete? Does she hear him?
Yeah, I think so.
Because
she's talking to Nimbus, I think, and then he says something back, and then she's like, wait, is the grass talking? And then she realizes that the noise is coming from the sprinkler spout.
Right, so she looks down into the grass and sees Little Pete down there, and boom, they're friends. So, Little Pete digs and digs and digs and digs for a long time. He has dynamite, which I thought was... I wrote, where did he get the dynamite? He's, like, blowing up things.
But
I mean,
which is totally on brand for Little Pete. Like, it's not at all surprising to me that Pete would have a source for dynamite or, like, already have it in his possession. Like, he's exactly the kind of kid that would, like, try and blow up the toilet at school or something.
But he also, like...
Which is a thing that happened at my school.
Someone blew up the toilet at your school? With what?
Yeah. A cherry bomb? Yeah.
Oh, I forgot what I was gonna say.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No, I started thinking about what that would be like.
Oh, yeah. Well, you were talking about his
dynamite. I remember. I feel like saying that a little kid blew up underneath his house with dynamite sounds like it could be really cartoony if they had a budget, but they didn't. So, like, all they did was, like, be like, oh, and he had dynamite, and, like, then they, like, shook the camera around. which made it, like... I don't know, there's something about how you don't, it's not like you saw an explosion, they didn't, like, they a little bit just, like, glaze over that, too, which makes this feel less kid-like, in a way, to me. I don't know, does that make any sense?
But as he's, like, tunneling out, that you begin to be able to actually see the silhouette of the tunnel through the grass, because all of the grass above him is starting to die. So Nona, as an ally, starts spray painting the grass green. And also, Pete's dad, like, comes across her talking to little Pete underground, and then she tells him that, like, oh, I'm just talking to your grass and trying to make it grow.
And then he starts doing it because he believes her, but also it works.
Yeah, and I don't think we mentioned that he's actually in a competition with their neighbor to, like, see whose grass is the nicest. And, like, whoever loses the bet has to water the other one's grass for a really long time. So his neighbor is actually, like, surveilling the Wrigley's grass and, like, property, and has, like, weird little cameras and microphones all around. So he, like, overhears her saying this, and he starts... And he thinks she's being serious, so he starts talking to his grass as well.
Yeah. And, oh, we kind of glazed over Artie in the last episode, and I didn't mean to.
Well, we could talk about Artie later. Because it's like a whole... That's a whole
other... So Artie, the strongest man in the world, is like Pete's best friend. He bring... when
he actually is an adult.
He's a grown-up man. he brings... While Pete is grounded, he brings him an ant farm, and that's actually what gives Pete, little Pete, the idea to tunnel out. But so, it's like, he's talking to these ants the whole time, too. There's, like, a point where he gives up, and he's like, Bob, why do you guys even try? Like, you know you're not gonna get anywhere. It's sad.
Yeah.
I also noticed in this one, like, you were talking about how he dresses before, his shirts are always, like, gigantic, and, like he's wearing, like, adult shirts, like, sleeves past his hands, and, really? Yeah, not always, but enough that it's noticeable, and I forget why I think this. I think it might be from one of the shorts, but when he got the Petunia tattoo, it was as a gift to his mom, but it makes her faint when she sees it, I think I might be making that up, but so that, like, it's something about covering his tattoo, why he has to wear these big shirts all the time so he can cover up his arm.
Oh, interesting. I just thought it was because it was the 90s and, like, everyone.
No, but his shirts are, like, ridiculously big. All right. Anything else about Grounded for Life before we go on to Sick Day?
Well, at the end of the episode, like, his family goes out for the fireworks, and then his dad starts, like, thinking, like, looking around and, like, seeing all the things that Pete would enjoy so much, and he starts feeling really guilty. And so he decides to turn around and come home, because if he goes home now, he can get Pete and come back before the fireworks start. And, like, just as he's rolling up to the house, Pete is, like, making his break of freedom, breaking through the grass, and it's just, it's a really good episode.
Oh, and Nona, like, they do such a good job at, like, starting to make Nona, like, not just some girl character, like, she really has, like, a character from the very beginning, so, like, she really misses her, where she just moved from, and so she's standing outside her house gluing pictures of her old house onto her new house.
Like, pictures of the bricks.
Yeah, and she just carries them around. It's like, she's... I like her a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Sick Day. So, in Sick Day, little Pete decides to fake sick for a day. They're like, I love how they talk about, like, there's that period of school where there's, like, no breaks and you're just, like, in school forever. There's no days off and no vacations or anything, and, like, that
between New Year's and President's Day, I think.
Yeah, and that feels like,
which, like, actually is not that long.
No, but, like, I know what they mean, and it's, like, it's in winter, yeah. So it always just, like, it's real, that feeling of, like, we were just, like, trying to get to the end. So he decides he needs to give himself a day off. He fakes sick using something that him and Big Pete call Operation Tapioca, where a store clerk smuggles him an expired tapioca label, and then they plant the can in the trash for his mom to find it and convince her that he has food poisoning.
And I think the store clerk, hang on.
Oh, is she somebody?
I think there's a lot
of cameos in this episode.
So many cameos. And like all of the episodes.
They weren't even cameos then. Like, these people weren't even famous yet. Maybe they were.
No, that's not true. I mean, Iggy Pop is right, known as Pop. Dad.
Was LL Cool J famous yet? Spoiler, LL Cool J Definitely. Is his teacher. All right, maybe they were all a little famous. Never mind.
In the episode where 35 Hours, I think it's called, where Big Pete and Little Pete are trusted with the house for the weekend when their parents go away, and Little Pete sells the house to get back at Big Pete for blowing him off. Patty Hearst, like, plays the mother of the family that buys the house, which is really weird.
That's crazy. I didn't know that one until you told me yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, Sick Day is actually from season two.
It's from the end of season three.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, no, that's no one.
Okay, cool.
The grocery clerk is no one.
Little Pete breaks the one cardinal rule of faking sick, which is that he goes out of his house.
He goes outside.
He's tempted by the, hold on, I have to look up what it's called. It's another Kreb product.
The Adventures of Pete and Pete, Krebs Star is like the stand-in corporation name, like Acme is in.
Yeah, there's like a lot of like the Krebs Scouts and. It's not a Krebs product. It's the Excalibur 2000, which is the most powerful garage door opener known to man, and has a great theme song in the episode. But before any of that, he gets Dwight D. Eisenhower stuck up his nose. I forgot that part.
he has a cereal that he eats that has the marshmallow heads of all of the presidents. And he stuck every single one of them up his nose except for Martin Van Buren.
It's Dwight D. Eisenhower. Martin Van Buren saves him later.
Oh... Okay.
So he's stuck every president up his nose except Dwight D. Eisenhower. He finds Eisenhower at, like, the bottom of his bowl of cereal. He gets, like, super excited, sticks him right up his nose. He goes to remove it, and he cannot. So he spends the entire episode with an Eisenhower stuck up his nose. and then he, you know, garage door opener, he goes out, and, like, it's stressed several times that he's breaking the one cardinal rule. Like, it's in the narration by Big Pete. He then runs into an adult who says, "Pete, you're breaking the one cardinal rule of faking sick. You are out of the house." He runs into several adults who will later help him in the episode. The first is, the meter man, Chris Elliott, I don't know what his real name is in the episode, but played by Chris Elliott.
I think he's listed on IMDb.
Just the meter man. He doesn't have a name.
Oh, wait. Meter Man Ray.
All right. So Meter Man Ray comes over to read the meter, and he doesn't just read the meter. He can also see the future through the meter. He sees two things, I think. He sees what appears to be a nuclear bomb. And then he sees our eighth president, Martin Van Buren. He tells Little Pete about it, advises him not to leave the house. Little Pete leaves the house anyway. So Little Pete's walking around town with the garage door opener, and he runs into the mail lady, who I love so much, played by Bebe Neuwirth.
She's one of the best, I think, one of the best characters in the show.
She's narrating her life. She's got a tape recorder, and she's narrating her life for her autobiography, which will be titled, I wrote it down, where is it? Stand and Deliver, it will be called. I love, like, every time he runs into an adult in this episode besides his parents, they don't scold him. He's like, hey, I'm faking sick. And they're like, all right, what are you up to?
Why are you outside? You broke the rule.
Yeah, they're like, they're worried about him. They're worried about him getting caught. So, and each time he meets with one of them, they actually kind of vow to protect him should he need it later, which he does. So, oh man, Bebe Neuwirth said the best thing into her tape recorder. So she's walking and she finds one glove and she picks it up and she says, somewhere a child walks with one cold hand. I will do what I can. So, anyway.
It's better than that sounds. It's better than that sounds.
Her delivery is better because she's an actress and I'm not. So, anyway. There's a lot of drama going on in this episode, too. Big Pete describes, like, him leaving the house as the biggest risk in the world. Because, you know, kid world. So little Pete finds himself back at school, which was like the whole thing he was trying to avoid to begin with, but he kind of just like wants to see what his friends are up to. And I love that Clem, his friend, has grown a beard while they were away. LL Cool J is, like, all, his teacher is all, like, dressed up in Hawaiian gear because it's, like, a big party when Little Pete isn't there.
Oh, my God. Hang on. What? Hold up. Okay. Hold up. Clem is the, he was in
Clem
Heavyweights.
Clem is in Heavyweights, yeah.
And the Mighty Ducks.
He's that kid. And he's also super good looking
so many
now.
Things. Yeah, that's why I was, like, whoa.
Yeah,
what?
He like does not look like the pudgy little kid that he looked like.
Yeah. Wow. Not bad. Sorry. Continue.
So while Little V goes back to school, he's looking through the window and he sees the kid who sits behind him, who he didn't consider a friend. But he starts to like really look at this kid and like think about who he is, and he chews fluoride? No, it's not fluoride. It's they call it? He's chewing candy that his dentist gave him.
Which you chew it and then it makes your mouth all red and so it like highlights the plaque.
So they do like several.
Is that stuff real? Like, does that stuff actually exist?
Probably, but I've never had it. Plaque candy. Yeah. They call it plaque candy in the show. But they keep doing these like gross close-ups of his mouth, filled with the plaque candy. But so this is where Little Pete starts to learn his lesson because he kind of like sees the world without himself in it, kind of, and it makes him really consider who this kid who sits behind him is. And he then goes to the kid's house. And makes a new friend by the end of the episode. And the kid actually is, like, really wise and helps him get Dwight D. Eisenhower out of his nose. And it has something to do with Martin Van Buren, but not gonna lie, I get super confused about what it has to do. Was it because he had Martin Van Buren stuck up his nose? And he used the static to get it out?
Yeah, he had the solution, which was to rub your feet on the carpet a bunch of times and then touch a doorknob and the electric shock will make it shoot out of your
mouth. So that's how he gets it out. Oh, and he also, when Pete is at the school, he also runs into Stu the bus driver, who's a great character.
Stu? Oh, I don't remember him being
Stu actually sees him, like, glancing into the window and starts making an announcement over the bus intercom. And then Pete's like, yo, you gotta stop it. Like, I'm faking sick. Like, they can't know I'm here. And Stu's like, oh, yeah. So Stu is actually the one who drives him to Glenn Wordle's house. So then Mom's coming home at the end of the episode, and all three of the adults who he's run into during the day, like, do this, like, calls out to the wild that, like, alert him that his mom is coming home, so he can get home before her. Which I think is really sweet that they all, like, come together to protect him. I don't know. Kara, anything else about this ep? before we break into like some of the larger themes, I feel like that come up.
I don't think so.
We haven't talked about the plate in Mom's head.
Yeah. My friend Charlie has a plate in
his head. That's real? Why do people have plates in their head? I was thinking about it today.
Yeah, well, generally, if, you know, they've had to, like, cut into your skull for any reason, like, because your skull can't, like, grow back, basically.
That makes sense. Okay.
They'll cover it up with a plate, or sometimes it's a patch. I don't know, but I was curious, like, if he had ever seen the show and, like, what he might think about the plate in Pete's mom's head, but he wasn't born yet, because he's my young friend. So I was like, oh, thank you. That was both unhelpful and made me feel old.
So, yeah, at the end of the episode, he uses the garage door opener. He has forgotten to close the garage, so he beams the signal off of the plate in Mom's head while she's driving home to close the garage. They use the plate in her head a lot for a lot of stuff that I'm sure you couldn't really use a plate in your head for, but it works. It serves the show really well.
It does.
But she has this, like, weird, quirky thing that they exploit all the time. So, do you want to talk about Artie?
Sure.
So, Artie, the strongest man in the world, is Little Pete's best friend.
He's the only one that has a moniker like that, which is interesting, because I feel like Stu, the bus driver, should be like, Stu, the emotionally unstable bus driver.
Yeah.
Because he has some issues, but anyway.
No, I mean, so he's this, like, Little Pete sees him as, like, a superhero, but he doesn't, like, he doesn't have powers or anything. He just, like, is a weird guy who, like, lives in town, and the adults all, like, don't like him, but the kids all love him, and he, like, dances around funny, and, like, I would say that he's, like, the only... He seems almost like an imaginary friend, except he's real. Like, he's, like, the only... Maybe not the only character, but one of the only characters on this show who, like, just isn't based in reality, like, at all. There's nothing real about him, because if there were, he would be really creepy.
That is definitely true. You want to know... Well, you said you haven't watched Halt and Catch Fire on AMC,
no.
Right? Well, it is a show that's basically, like, Mad Men, but about the personal computer industry in Texas in the late 80s and early 90s. Or, like, early 80s, actually. And Toby Huss, who plays Artie, the strongest man in the world, is on that show where he plays this, like, grizzled, older computer salesman who... I did not realize they were the same person. Like, the range that this man has is unbelievable, because when I was first, like, IMDBing Pete and Pete, and I was like, Toby Huss, why do I know that name? And I clicked on his IMDB profile and was like, oh my god! Holy shit! It's crazy.
Well, I'm happy for him that he's still working. Like, I feel like a lot of people in this, like, this was the only thing they were ever in.
Yeah, I mean, that's true of, like, a lot of people, but also there's plenty of people who, like, went on to do things.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, what, like, I want to talk about why this show, wait, before I do that, before I take us somewhere else, do we have... anything else to say about Artie? Like, I feel like they wrote Artie off the show. So they wrote Artie off the show in season 2, is that right?
Yeah.
And, like...
in a 2-part episode, Farewell, My Little Viking.
Like, I feel like they had to do it because he was, like, weird and creepy a little bit. Like, his time had passed.
That, and also, I think it's, you know, Little Pete was getting to that age where, like, having a imaginary friend is like goes from like cute to also creepy and weird. You know what I mean? Like, if he was really an imaginary friend, that would be around the age where he would kind of go by the wayside.
Yeah, you know? I think, yeah, it was definitely, it's well-timed to lose Artie there. But so what I want to talk about is, why this show resonated with us so much. Like, there were so many shows after this, like, live-action Nickelodeon shows, but I can't think of any that I have, like, such an emotional attachment to the way that I do to this show.
Yeah, same. And again, back to New Jersey, I wonder if it's the New Jersey.
Definitely that's, but I don't think we're the only ones. Like, they do Pete and Pete reunions. Yeah. They still have a podcast together. Like, there's still an audience for this in us.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, like, we've talked a lot on this show about, like, our senses of humor. And mm-hmm. I think there are parts of this and the weirdness of this show that really play to that. In a way that's respectful to us. Like, the same way they treat Little Pete respectfully, I think they treat us pretty respectfully as well. It's not like over the top. It's not too silly. It's just weird. Like, if it was just like a bunch of like smart adults who were like, let's make this weird thing.
Yeah. Which, you know, we talked about that with Ren and Stimpy. That was very much the kind of, what's that French word that I can never pronounce? Raison d'etre of Nickelodeon at that time, and has like a very kind of similar gross out aesthetic without being, but also I think because it is a live action show, a low budget live action show, that there are certain constraints that keep it from going like too far off the deep end, which makes it that much more grounded in reality and therefore more emotionally real.
Yeah, and it was in that same time period, like, where Nickelodeon didn't have, did they have any original programming? I should have looked.
Well, this would be among the first.
Yeah, and so, sure. Like, there were no, not that there weren't any rules, but, like, there were kind of no rules yet. Like, no one was really telling them what they could and couldn't do, because there wasn't a standard set for what this is. Like, this was the first one. Mm-hmm. And it's the best one. I think of it, like, I was trying to think if there was, like, a live-action show that I was like, oh, yeah, like, that came after Pete and Pete and was clearly influenced by it. And I really couldn't think of one. Like, I thought more of shows like Recess, the cartoon, and, like, Hey Arnold, which is obviously also a cartoon, had the same kind of, like, heart and the same kind of, like, character building, I felt like. And that same kind of, like, realness of being a kid with, like, the kid rules and the drama and the, like, everything is life or death. I, like, saw those shows as being more similar to Pete and Pete than anything else.
Yeah.
I still want to see, like, I still want somebody who's not seen this before to sit down and watch it with me, and I want to understand if it's good or if I, you know, just have this lens that I can never get out of.
It could go either way, really. Yeah. I think it is really good, though.
I think so, too. And I think, like, as hopefully, we're going to do this again. I think we don't totally know what lens we might use next time. We've talked about using, like, Big Pete as a lens, like, let's watch Big Pete episodes. We've talked about, like, maybe we just do something that's about peripheral characters, where we explore all of those. I think that would be really fun. I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff.
Talking about all the different shooting locations.
Yeah, we can just talk about New Jersey for, like, a while.
In the very first episode, actually, that's the one where they go on a family road trip to the Hoover Dam. And the Hoover Dam, like, throughout the series, the Pete's dad is obsessed with. But the shots where they're driving in the car were actually filmed on the section of 287 between Montville and Mahwah, which hadn't yet been opened.
Oh, wow.
But, like, that's the section of 287 where I grew up.
So, and like, that's, every time and I that's like that my episode, drive. Like, I know that's my that drive from home to college. Like, because that's where Kara and I went to college, is up there, Ramapo College in Mahwah. That's so funny. That's my drive.
Yeah. One of the specials, what we did on our summer vacation, where Ellen, which is Big Pete's girl, who is a friend but not girlfriend, she has this job at like this little photo hut in a parking lot. And it seems like it's in the middle of nowhere, but it's actually the photo hut that is in the parking lot of the Willowbrook Mall in Jersey. So that's another one. And Ellen is an interesting character. I feel like she, like, was constantly working. Like, every episode that she's in, she's, like, has, like, another weird, different job. But that's kind of a side
Well, tangent. Yeah. I mean, I feel like if we do Big Pete episodes, we'll talk about Ellen a lot more. But she's sure. Very, like, type A, like, really, like, driven, like, super perfectionist. Like, I feel like she would do that. She would have, like, 100 jobs.
Yeah.
Well, we got anything else to say about Pete and Pete?
Oh, the sound design is really intense, especially during season two. Like, it just, there's a lot of, like, really dramatic music, but then also the use of, like, a lot of almost cartoony sound effects.
I didn't notice. Can you think of one?
Well, there's season two, episode three, an episode called The Call, which on the hottest day of the summer, little Pete decides to answer an infamous payphone that has been ringing for 27 years. Well, like, the, on so many levels, this specific, like, the premise of this episode doesn't work at all anymore because, like, A, answering machines and call waiting, and B, payphones. But anyway, Big Pete decides to figure out who the call is for. And so part of Pete's monologue at the very beginning of the episode is, it was one of those days when all of your summer dreams are burned out of your memory, like butt flesh on a superheated backseat. In some towns, they blame the heat and the humidity. But here in Wellsville, we factor in the mind-shattering sound of the ringing phone. And so that episode in particular is, like, very auditory in nature. You have the ringing phone, but then also it sounds like they used a track of really loud cicadas, like, through most of the episode summer? Too. No, I just think that like buzzing noise kind of can make you feel insane. You know what I mean? So, like, because they don't actually acknowledge that sound. Like, they acknowledge a bunch of other, like, sizzling sounds and, like, whatever, but they never mention, like, and the sound of cicadas. So I think they were just, like, using that noise as, like, a way to just make you feel insane and, like, give the episode kind of this, like, tangible feeling. And I was trying to figure out if it was shot the same year as the like 17-year cicada thing, but it wasn't. That was a different year, which happened again recently in like 2013, and was cool because cicadas are cool.
I remember that when the cicadas came when I was small, probably when the show
was
on.
1997. No, I think it was 97. I spent a lot of time looking
at this. I love how you're like, oh, I didn't take that many notes on these episodes, but you're like...
But I did spend at least an hour and a half trying to figure out if that year was a cicada invasion or not.
Oh, That's my favorite.
Again, stickler.
I know, this
for
is
details.
Why I turn to you for like real information, and I'm just like blah blah blah, and I'm like, Kara, is this real? Speaking of like sound, we didn't talk about the theme song. Is like, I feel like if you watch the show, the theme song is like one of the most iconic things because it's a great song, has nothing to do with the show. Nope. And the lyrics are actually like, in my opinion, like quite adult and weird. But great song. The Polaris is the band that sings the song,
which was a band that was like put together specifically right. for the show. They weren't actually like a real band. You can hear actually on WTF with Mark Maron, Mark J. Mulcahy, I think is his name, was on recently, cool. And they actually talked about that, like how that all happened, which was interesting.
They appear in one more episode. Like little Pete gets like obsessed with one of their songs.
Well, because he hears it, like he hears part of it on the radio, and then he's like wandering around trying to figure out who the song is by and what the song is, and then he starts his own band
called the Blowholes. This is a great name.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we'll get into all that one day. We'll watch all these episodes one day.
This is a Pete and Pete episode. Oh, I just ruined that joke.
we can edit. You can make it this again.
I'm going to. This is a Pete and Pete podcast now. I hope you guys are okay with that.
We can have guests on, I guess, or whatever, but all Pete and Pete all the time. If we did that, it would be my number one goal to get Michael and Danny on.
Oh, which is, I think, is actually totally doable, given that, A, they already have a podcast, which is... Like, there's a surprising barrier to getting people on podcasts is that they don't know what podcasts are.
Oh, really?
Or, like, they don't... Yeah, like, they don't really have an understanding of, like, what they are and how they're made and, like, how easy it can be to just, like, record one. So I feel like anyone who already has a podcast is, like, 6 times more likely to be a guest on your podcast. But also because of like the weird Northern New Jersey, everyone is 1 degree away from Danny Tamborelli thing. Like, I feel like we could definitely make it happen if we wanted to try.
Like, it would, like, I wouldn't even know what to say because I would hate to have like a fun opportunity to talk to somebody and then like waste the opportunity asking them a bunch of stuff that people have asked them before. Like, I don't need to do that. I'm not special.
Remember that episode where they did the thing and that was great.
Yeah. So I feel like it would be so fun, but like, what would I even say? Like, what could we even add to this universe? You know, especially because they do reunions and I don't know, the EV Club's talked about it a lot. What you have to think about, like what new something can we bring to this?
Well, I have to dig into the AV Club archive.
Oh, you should.
See. Yeah. See if we can come up with a new angle.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think the masculinity thing might be the key.
I do like that a lot. And, like, do you think, like, because I feel like that's a topic that's, like, it's a hot topic these days.
What? And you could, like, teach an entire gender studies class about this
like,
show.
Like, what would this show look like today? Like, would this show wouldn't get made like this. No, like, nope. I don't know. What would it look like today?
There's no way. I mean, it would probably have to be some sort of, like, Netflix or Amazon original content.
Because it's weird.
Because it's weird as hell. And, like, also, it's, like, a really, like, the pitch for this show, I feel like, would not get a lot of biters. So it's a show about two brothers, and they're both named Pete, and one is little, and one is big, and they just, you know, they have wacky adventures and stuff. Like, that...
It's true. I was trying to explain it to my coworker the other day who's, like, she's older than me. She's probably, like, in her mid-40s. So, like, she's never seen this. She doesn't have kids who would have seen this. So I was trying to explain it to her, and all she could, she, like, couldn't get over that they were both named Pete. I was like, no, but that's not, whatever.
That's, like, the least weird part about the show.
You don't get it.
Yeah, it was certainly a moment in time. And also, I feel like you, well, maybe you could get the cameos that you did in this. Like, it, there's just so many weird cameos. Maybe the Wikipedia article has a whole list.
I feel like we should do an episode that's, like, all about cameos and peripheral characters and the amazing names that they give people. I started to write down everybody's names, but I could, it was too many.
Yeah,
they really name people really well. Like Endless Mike, Wayne the Pain. Endless Mike, there's something about that that's like, I just think that's the best name in the whole world.
It is, like, especially for a bully.
Endless Mike, that could mean anything. It could mean so many things.
Yeah, okay. So, there definitely is a whole list on the Wikipedia.
Oh, look, guest stars, cool. You're right, there is. Wow, there's so many.
So many.
All right. I do think that wraps this up for this time.
But we barely scratched the surface.
We barely scratched the surface of Pete and Pete. I guess I need an intro.
Okay. Remember how I said before that the grocery store clerk that slips one of the Pete's, the counterfeit label with the fake expiration date. I said that she was nobody.
Lied.
I was wrong. Her name is Sarah Shannon. She is a female vocalist best known for her work in the band Velocity Girl, which doesn't really clear anything up.
But she does have a Wikipedia page.
And she does have a Wikipedia page. Yep. Oh my god, Alicia Keys was a student in one of the episodes. Wow.
Michael Stipe, J.K. Simmons, Larissa Olenek, before she was Alex Mack.
Mm-hmm. I just, in one of the last episodes of season 3, Selma Blair plays a fellow student. Extremely young Selma Blair. But, like, so many good... Oh, Janine Garofalo plays one of the teachers... But so many good, like, music people, like Debbie Harry, LL Cool J, like you said, Luscious Jackson, which is a band, not a person. Yeah, just good stuff. Good stuff all around.
I feel like if there was, like, a show that had all these cameos on it today, I mean, I guess they do that on kids' shows today, but it's on cartoons, and people just do the voices. There's no, like, live-action show.
Right.
Like, I feel like it would all be with, like, a wink. Like, this, but these cameos don't feel like they're, like, with a wink. Like, it's just, like, people playing silly characters, you know?
Yeah.
They're not like, oh, isn't
it
so cool?
And also, it's like, who is, who is this for? Like, the kids are not gonna know who Iggy Pop is, you know?
Well, I think the adults who made this were smart enough to make it not for adults, but maybe a little bit for themselves.
Yeah.
I want to know how famous LL Cool J was when he was on this. Let's see.
He was, like, really famous.
He's, like, really famous. Like, his biggest album was in 1987.
Yeah. Oh,
and this
was,
he was, like, on his way down. This was like, he was in Toys around this time. That's a weird movie. Oh, and then he made Hey Lover, and that's when he entered my life, because that song was huge. Okay, outro time. Well, that does it for this episode of Wistful Thinking. You can hear us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and CageClub.me, and find us on Facebook and on Instagram and Twitter at WistfulPod. See ya!
Bye!
I love that you always wait a beat and then you say bye.
I think it's more that, like, I just forget to say something, and then I'm like, oh, I should say bye too.
I really like it, and I always do. I couldn't stand it. I couldn't sit down. One look at her, and I stumbled around. One look at her, I get irrational. Well, she ties my tongue. I saw her downtown on a cloudy day, and she brought the sun. She's not a part of the scene. She don't socialize. She does her own thing. She's ahead of her time, just the right speed. She is staggering. I couldn't stand up, I couldn't sit down. I wanna look at her and I stumble around. She is staggering. She is staggering. She's uncommonly heavenly. She is so rare. She's beautiful, exceptional. But she doesn't care. And I couldn't stand up, I couldn't sit down.